Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're on a mine site and 300 men are on strike because they want to work with a girl, you've got to sit back and go, you know, why am I doing this?
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with award-winning mortgage broker, entrepreneur, and author, Jane Slack-Smith. Originally a miner from Dubbo, Slack-Smith changed her career path for good after starting her portfolio at 31. Join us to hear how she turned $45,000 into a multi-million dollar portfolio, and stay tuned as she explains how you can do the same thing. Growing up in regional New South Wales, Slack-Smith followed an exciting path upon leaving school.
As a girl from the bush, from a farm in Dubbo, I was one of the first to attend university in my family, and I did a mining engineering degree and specialised in explosives. So I spent the next 18 years working in the mining industry, which was very exciting. And in that period of time, I knew that I was probably just working for my money day in and day out and doing nothing with it. And I knew I had to do something, and I had a, you know, come to Jesus moment with a reading of Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and started to think more about my future and what I wanted to achieve. So I took my risk assessment skills of understanding risks and likelihoods and consequences of risk to property investment and built a property portfolio from, you know, a mere $45,000 start way up to a multi-million dollar portfolio today, and decided along the way that I wanted to teach other people how to do it too. So I essentially started looking into how I could assist people in their education on how to find the right property in the right area to get them to their goals quicker. And I realized back in 2004, 2005, that if I did that without having professional indemnity insurance, I was probably going to put some risk around my own portfolio. And the only person or profession at that stage that could talk about property was a mortgage broker. So I decided to do that part-time, and that lasted about 3 weeks because of the demand of people wanting some assistance. And I went full-time. And since that start, way back in 2005, I've won Australia's Mortgage Broker of the Year twice, and Property Investment Advisor runner-up in a recent award, which I'm really proud of. And in 2012, I decided it was time to put all the education and knowledge around property investing and building my portfolio and all of the thousands of investors I'd worked with into play, and started Your Property Success, which is an online education platform that assists people in getting to their property success.
Slack-Smith's achievements are incredibly inspiring, but what motivates her to keep pushing forward?
I am perpetually curious. So I always want to learn more, and I'm always signing up for courses. And something like, James Patterson teaches how to write, because I'm interested in how to convey my message and be a better writer. I don't necessarily want to write a book. I have written one book, Your Property Success with Renovation, but, I don't plan on writing anymore. But it just intrigues me looking at people who excel at what they do and shortcutting the path of pain that they've been through, and learn from their mistakes and learn their recommendations so I can put those things into place. So, you know, I do courses on photography, writing, you know, marketing, obviously, finance, and I'm always looking to learn more, and I'm always curious about what people are doing so that I can learn from their experiences as well.
Wow. Where do you find the time to do all this?
You just have to get up early, you can achieve anything.
Select Smith tells us about her family.
My husband was a consultant and then in IT, and, you know, with our portfolio, he stopped work when he was 42, I think. So he is now following his dream, which is being a full-time artist. So he does photorealistic art, and you can have a look at toddsimpsonart.com. But beautiful works, and, you know, they go into the Archibald and the portrait exhibitions in London, etc. So he's following his dreams, and unfortunately, I don't have a hobby that I could check out with and spend all day at. My hobby is kind of teaching other people. So, you know, I'm also following my dream and doing what I love, which is helping others. And I've got a 9-year-old son who keeps us entertained. As of the weekend, I am the proud completer and designer of a Nerf gun arsenal storage shadow board. So, you know, the things that I can do are amazing.
Family always is fun, especially with children as well.
You never know when someone's going to jump out from behind a wall and shoot you with a Nerf gun in my house.
Aside from the exciting home life, how does Slack Smith spend her time?
Essentially, I have the mortgage broking business and I have the education business. So on a given day, I might have 3 to 4 discovery calls with new clients who are looking for finance, and we just work out whether we're a good fit and working together, because I don't believe that everyone, you know, works together well. So for me, it's really important in providing some understanding of what each party needs in a relationship so that we can go on, because I really want to be part of people's long-term goals rather than a one-and-done kind of loan provider. Mm. And then the rest of the time, we're usually in pre-production for podcasts and videos and looking at how to do virtual reality exciting things with our new videos and looking at how we can update our courses and material for our students. And a lot of time is spent assisting the community on our private Facebook pages in answering questions and putting them in touch and getting them to the results that they want. So, yeah, pretty full day.
So what kind of services does she provide for her clients and students?
Look, one of the things when I started investing, and that was, you know, I was looking around 1999, 2000, so I guess, you know, it's almost 17 years of investing, was that there was a few books, and, you know, Jan Summers, you know, loved her books, and Robert Kiyosaki, and there was a few educators out there, but you never knew who to trust, and there was always, you know, buy my course and then it's a good buy, or get my loan, or get my, you know, whatever someone was selling. And it was kind of that feeling that it was a transaction. And I, you know, I genuinely, for me, it's about the stories and it's about the people and it's about getting people to a place that might just be an aha moment. Or, you know, I spoke to a lady today who thought that she could do nothing because her borrowing capacity leads her to a purchase price of $160,000. And we talked about areas and the fundamentals of low-risk investing and, you know, looking for infrastructure and population growth and economy growth. And we highlighted a few areas that she could afford. And she was so excited. She said, you know, this is a revelation to me. I feel I can almost breathe again because I really want to invest, but I feel that I can't get into the market. So it's just those moments that, for me, make my day complete, and which are really exciting for me. So yeah, that's pretty much what we do, is provide courses. Ultimate Guide to Renovation is our premium course that comes out twice a year in February and September. We have a Your Property Success Club, which is a 12-month club giving people, you know, at a much lower price point, but a really good quality information every month, because I know that everyone can't afford, you know, fancy courses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we do a lot of Q&A calls, monthly Q&A calls and support. And for me, it's helping people get over maybe just a tiny little roadblock that they think could stop them, and moving forward. And that moving forward to us is, you know, why we do what we do, is getting people to their goals.
Yeah, that's really good. And it's really inspiring to be able to hear that you're helping and impacting quite a lot of people there. And I know a lot of listeners out there want to be able to get involved in this, because the fact is that there are so many experts out there, or so-called experts, and you don't know who to trust. And I think the good thing is that you've already proven that success with the many years that you've been in the market teaching people on this as well.
Unconventionally, Slex Smith started off in the mining industry. How did that come about, and what inspired her to change careers into the property industry?
I had a very wise person tell me once that it wasn't really important what you studied. It was the fact that you learned how to study and learned how to learn. So I knew I had to have a scholarship to go to university. And, you know, my family couldn't afford to send me off. And so I looked at where the scholarships were, where my skills were. And, you know, they say that you have three careers in a lifetime these days. And that's on today's, you know, life expectancy. It's going to be a whole lot more in a few years' time.
I think it's more than three now.
Yeah. So I knew it wasn't a job for life. I knew it was an opportunity to learn. So I had a lot of strengths in engineering. They were looking for girls in engineering then, and although I don't believe in affirmative action at the time, I kind of stumbled into the fact that there was promotion of women in engineering, and I looked at all the different engineering courses, and a lot of them just seemed to be boring. You know, you're designing something and you never get out there and do things. And mining engineering, you learned a bit of mechanical, a bit of civil, you did surveying and geology, and you're in a ute driving around big mines, you know, telling dozer drivers what to do and blowing stuff up. And then I worked underground for a year on night shift as a labourer, because there's a belief that you can't become a manager and tell other people what to do until you've done it yourself, which I, you know, grew up with, you know, cleaning up stables on the farm. So, you know, we were always pitching in and doing things. But I was the first girl to work in underground coal mines. Another girl and I turned up at the same day at two different mines after they changed the laws back in 1989 to let women underground, and everyone went on strike. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, it's amazing to think in our lifetime there was still those kind of things going on. But there was, you know, some adversities to get over, and you just had to get in and do the work and prove that you were willing to learn, and that's what I did. And you know, I had a really great relationship, had a wonderful career and very successful career in the mining industry. But after building a really good portfolio and having so many people ask how do you do it, and sitting on a mine site in Mount Isa waiting to push a button and for a mountain to blow up kind of thing, people were asking what to do, and I was doing all these kind of toolbox talks on mine sites all around Australia, and I thought, well, if people are really interested, I could teach this, and I like teaching. So yeah, that's how I kind of moved from mining onwards.
Oh, okay. So you're actually on touring around or going around different places to be able to teach people how to invest into property. Is that what you're doing initially?
No. So what I was doing was at that time I was working for a company that was an explosives company, and as an expert, different mine sites would ask me to come and design blasts for them or do safety audits or, you know, do incident analysis of something that went wrong. So I got by virtue of that to go to most mine sites throughout Australia.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
And whilst I was on the mine sites, they'd go, hey, what have you been up to? I'm like, I'm going back to Sydney to renovate a house this weekend. They're like, what? Tell me about it. So naturally one thing would lead to another, and they're like, how are you doing this? I'm like, how are you not doing it? We're on the same income. So then we started chatting about, well, how can you, you know, make your money work for you rather than not work for you? You work for your money. So to Robert Kiyosaki. So yeah.
Okay. Which is really interesting that you said that. So on, say for example, back then, and this is, I don't know if it's changed a lot, but I know that back then mining was paid quite well. So there was obviously a lot of cash flow coming through there. Do you think you had enough money back then to be able to just buy property, or did you have to renovate in order to actually buy more investment properties?
Well, I like most people, I went from a university income of $10,000 a year to a first year out graduate income of like $75,000 a year, and my lifestyle expanded to my
quite substantially. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember getting my first credit card going, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I can buy an Origin handbag and I don't have to pay for it. And then I realized a few months later that I did have to pay for it. But so I was very much into that disposable world. You know, I hadn't come from an affluent background, so having money, you know, I could help my parents, I could help put my sister through school and put her through university, I could, you know, go on holidays. So I did all of that, and I didn't save a lot. And then when I hit 28 and sat down and had the moment with Rich Dad Poor Dad, I thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm going to have to help my parents when they retire, because they'll be on the couple's income because they haven't got it, you know, investments that they can fall back on. And I've only got a certain amount of time to do this. So I smartened up. I read a lot of books about budgeting, and you know, I decided to withdraw all of my pay every week, and you know, I'd have green money, silver money, gold money, so I'd have savings money, money I could spend and save, and money that was, you know, available for very long-term savings. And I built up savings of $45,000, and essentially I then went and did a lot. I was based in Melbourne at the time. I did a lot of research about the suburbs within 10Ks that I could afford. Most of them I couldn't. And then I came up with three suburbs, which was Fitzroy, Collingwood and Carlton. And I just walked the streets and got to know them intimately, to the point where, you know, you go to auctions and predicting the price within 1%. And I knew that because I was going to use all of my $45,000, that if I wanted to buy a second property quickly, I had to create equity, or because my savings would take too long. So the renovation strategy was around creating that equity quickly. So I bought my first property for $425,000. $25,000 went straight to stamp duty, so I had a 5% deposit. And then 9 months later, that $425,000 property was revalued at $700,000. So I did. I took a personal loan out and did a $50,000 renovation, and then I pulled out $100,000 and went to Sydney and did it for the next property, and pulled out money and did it again, and built up the portfolio very quickly by using no more than that first $45,000 to contribute to buying the properties.
That's very, very smart, and I think by doing that, you really leapfrog very, very fast into different parts of the market very quickly. And what time was that when you first started investing in Melbourne?
So 2001 on April Fool's Day. No, it was St. Patrick's Day. My business was registered on April Fool's Day in 2005, but my first investment property was St. Patrick's Day in 2001.
Wow. How did you feel when you first bought your first property?
Oh my gosh, like I felt since every property since, buyer's remorse. You're like, oh my God, what have I done? And then you sit down and go, I've done the numbers, I've done the research, I understand the risks, I've minimized the risks, it's right.
Yeah.
But I think when I speak to clients, and you know, we've got people putting in offers on properties every day, and I do deal reviews for our clients to just make sure that it's the property fits their buying criteria. And every single time, you know, those people who are not feeling buyer's remorse, I have a few worries about, and I make sure I ask some extra questions, because I think you need to, you know, we're not talking about, you know, buying a packet of chips. We're playing with hundreds of thousands of dollars and potential to create, you know, financial freedom in the future. So it's a big decision, and I think, you know, it should be taken not lightly. And so buyer's remorse is definitely, I think that's a good thing.
It's something that should be a natural instinct, but some people might not just have it because they just look simply at the numbers.
It's when it actually proves itself correctly in the long term that you could be have a worry. But in that 7 day cooling off period, if you can satisfy all your worries and concerns, then yes, it's a good thing to move on.
Blacksmith went from mining engineer to property investor and renovator to teacher. At what point did she feel confident enough to turn the teaching into a business?
It was more about sharing. So I thought, well, if I can do this, I want to share this with my family and friends. So I actively talked to my best friends, and you know, my sister have multi-million dollar property portfolios, and I wanted to assist them. And then, you know, their friends would hear about what they'd done and how they'd, you know, located a great property in a great area and rented it out quickly or added some value through renovation. But it was all about the location that I felt was missing in the education. Mm. And that, as an engineer, that kind of, you know, Excel spreadsheets and using the internet, that was where my forte was. So, you know, just teaching people how to do that was important to me. And then essentially when people kept asking, I thought, you know, at some point I need to have some protection around my portfolio in case, you know, someone takes my story as advice and it goes wrong. And the only way I could do that is a mortgage broker. So for me, you know, although loans and financing is, you know, arguably the starting point to building a portfolio and understanding that and getting it right. I saw so many people set up with the wrong loans and, you know, with banks who'd been trying to help them out but hadn't structured them correctly and had limited their ability to buy and not achieve their goals. So in my whole conversation with people around their finance needs is about what the goals are, and it's about the property. It's not about the loan and how the property fits into the portfolio to achieve the goals and the time frame that people want. So so I guess I did things a little differently in the sense, to me, it was all about that journey and having long-term clients and being on that journey for the long term with them. So, you know, I provide different services to most mortgage brokers because, you know, I want to facilitate, I think, the total package of what people need when they're buying properties that, you know, it's difficult to get when you're starting out.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you're just starting out, as you mentioned, you've kind of got no idea of where to start. Mm. And, you know, some people just delve in because they see, okay, there's a good property. We think that's got the right things. They buy it, but they don't realize that the structure is so important because it helps you buy the second, the third, and the future properties. I've heard of lots of stories that have got them stuck only on one property because they didn't structure it correctly.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember, you know, there was this one guy and we talked about he wanted a passive income of $50,000 in 10 years' time. And then he rang up really excited. He said, I found this property. And it was like Kempsey or something, not to say anything against Kempsey. Mm. But I pulled up these Residex reports. I'm like, there's zero growth predicted and there's high vacancy rates. And he said, yeah, but it's cheap. It's the guy next to my dad's place and we don't have to go through an agent, so I'm getting it 10 grand cheaper. And we could see that in the next 10 years it was still going to be worth $250,000. It was going to cost him $5,000 a year and the difference between his costs and the income that he'd be pulling in. And it had nothing to do in getting him to the goals. And, you know, it was kind of that aha moment when I thought, you know, providing people with some thoughts and direction is one thing, but being very focused on delivering a quality education that people can go through at their own pace and not turn up for a weekend and get the rah-rah excitement and then, you know, get back home and life kind of hits you in the face. Mm-hmm. I wanted people to have a resource they could go to time and time again. And I looked around Australia and I couldn't find anyone doing online education in the kind of, you know, full of integrity and honesty and kind of like, here's the facts and, you know, take the information and do it yourself. You know, there's no kind of steak knives being thrown in. So I went to the States and I found an educator over there and spent a year being mentored, just flying backwards and forwards from Australia and learning best practices in trying to educate people in the best in adult education, and made us probably could have bought a house with what I had put into developing the education platform. But to be able to communicate those stories and sharings and, yeah, it's just, I mean, in the last, you know, 5 years, the community that we've built and the students that we have, they're just so lovely and so supportive. And, you know, just people in the private Facebook groups, you know, they might be saying, hey, there's a deal on Grays Online. I'm getting a ute together to go down and pick it up. Does anyone want to help? You know, I can pick up stuff for you and drop it off. Or there'll be someone else saying, you know, quick, I need a roof repair here, and people jumping online and giving people numbers or, you know, here's a property I've been looking at. What do you think I could do with the floor plan? And it's just the generosity of spirit and that community involvement that I'm just so proud of. And that's what I wanted. I wanted somewhere that people could go and feel that they could have a safe place to discuss property investing without having your friends and family going, oh, you're going to go broke.
That's what's missing out in the market a lot of times. And that by having that kind of community, I think it just forms a lot of camaraderie and also to encouragement and support. And that's what we all need, because this is not a journey that's is easily expressed to a lot of people. It's kind of a bit of a lonely journey if you're not doing it with any partners and stuff, and that's where you need the support. And I totally agree that the community you've set up sounds fantastic.
It's sometimes, you know, it's really hard for people, married people, who one's really keen to invest and the other isn't, and there's a lot of tension around that, and often there's a fear of losing, you know, hard-earned nest egg. And it's about taking the fear away by understanding the risks and minimizing those risks and having a conversation about, it's a step-by-step process. The location is key, you know, and that's why we spend so much time, we've developed, you know, the suburb selector software and all these, you know, different location courses and things to really help people target that. And, you know, tools like RP Data Professional and that I personally, for my mortgage pre-approved clients, I pay the 3 months of the pre-approval period to give people access to that, because I'm so focused on helping people, you know, make sure that they have the right resources and to be able to find the right property in the right area. And so there's some great products, you know, Ripe House and Microburbs, and, you know, there's a lot of free and unpaid resources. Just take a little bit of extra work to make them work for you. But there's also a lot of paid resources that people can use. And I think just having everything in one place where people can learn where to do it is really important as well.
Absolutely. And I think you're offering a fantastic package there in service for the people who, at least, you know, you're giving them complimentary things that they don't usually know even to access. A lot of people probably may not even know that this stuff existed until they actually found you.
And there's new websites popping up all the time, you know, and it's really exciting to kind of test them out and try to break them and see how I can manipulate them for my community's better good, you know. So it's like, hey, you know, instead of paying for access or doing like a, you know, half an hour trying to find this information on census, if you go to this website, you can find it in a few seconds. And I think, you know, as an investor, we can waste hours and hours on the internet searching without really knowing what the destination is, and being really clear on the goal and then your buying criteria and then finding the suburbs and then the pockets of potential within the suburbs and then the right property to suit the demographic. You know, you follow those simple steps and, you know, you're working with the, I guess, foundations of a really good portfolio.
Stepping back, Select Me takes us back to the beginnings of a property journey.
I was resistant to property, actually, Tyrone. I was very resistant. My boss kept saying to me, when are you going to get a mortgage so that I know that I have you for life? So I just thought, oh, my gosh. And the word mort is death, yes. You're right. So mortgage means death. So I was thinking, well, there's no way I'm going to be tied down to the white picket fence. You know, I'm footloose and fancy free. I'm only 28. And so I had a lot of fear around the property investment. And like a lot of people, I didn't realize that you could invest in property without owning your own home. So, you know, so I decided that I needed to create a financial future of security for myself. So I, after I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I went and signed up to Australian Stock Exchange courses, and I did all of their courses, and then I spreadsheeted and paper traded all of these shares just, you know, on a spreadsheet, didn't actually put my money in my pocket for anything. And I couldn't believe it. I'd come up with this great, you know, analysis of a company, and they'd then go and change the board or they change their strategic direction, and all my research had gone out the window.
No.
Like, I think I've got no control. And then for my 30th birthday, I decided that I would pay for 3 financial planners to assist me in putting it together, a plan together, and 2 of them just wanted to go into shares, and that's when I found out that financial planners are really salespeople. It was the paraplanners in the background that were doing all the work, but they were only confined by the products they were allowed to sell. So that really confused me. And then one guy wanted to day trade for me shares, which I don't even think financial planners legally could do. And I asked them about property, and they said, well, financial planners are not allowed to talk about property because it's not a listed property security class. So that all changed only just a few years ago. So I was kind of on my own. So I made this investment, my $45,000. I took the I basically monitored what the shares would have been done under the recommendations of the 2 brokers and financial planners. And I did my property investing at the same time. And obviously, you know, I made like $175,000 in 9 months with the property investing. And the one lot of shares that if I put my $45,000 in would have gone up to 50, and the other one went down to about 42. So
there's a clear
kind of dead. Yeah. And my husband had done property investing in New Zealand where he was from. And he had a little business whilst he was at uni mowing lawns. And there was like a 24-year-old guy who said, come mow my investment property lawn, and then he said, you did a good job, come mow the other ones. And my husband said, how did you get so many? And he said, the first one's the hardest. And once you get the right one for the first one, you can build your portfolio. So he was really inspired, and when we started dating, he was telling me about property investing, and I was still very reticent. So I was a reticent latecomer to property investing, albeit the fact that I did buy my first property when I was 31.
Being naturally cautious, Slacksmith worked hard to avoid making mistakes by learning from others.
Being a really low-risk person, it was so imperative to me that I pretty much knocked the risk out of every single thing that I did. So, and as I said, you know, being curious and a lifetime learner, I also wanted to read everyone's books. And, you know, I've got 135 books on property on my bookshelf at the moment. And wow. I really wanted to learn from others' mistakes so I didn't make them. So, you know, I'd go to these seminars, and look, let's be honest, there's not that much new stuff in property investing. And you'd go to the seminars and they'd be saying the same thing. But I then wanted to listen to the stories about what they did wrong, because most people get up and go, I lost everything and then I rebuilt it. I want to know what the mistakes they made to lose everything, so that I never had to do that. So I had the opportunity to jump, you know, on the shoulders of those giants, jump ahead and over the mistakes that they'd made. So I can't claim a devastating investing blow at all. I thought at one stage that a property that I'd done all the research for in Darlington near Newtown in Sydney was a bit of a dog, but it did 25% last year. So we're okay with that.
Okay, you're doing well. And what about any renovation things?
This is a two-year delay on what I had expected in the growth potential.
So what about renovation? Did she manage to avoid mistakes in that area of property too?
I think with renovation, it's a lot about being a bit of a detective sometimes and being solution orientated. I mean, obviously, you have to be a good project manager and as well. And I realised very quickly I wasn't the person who was going to be on the tools. So, you know, the first properties we bought were actually, I bought a property, my husband bought a property beside mine. So we thought we'd, you know, we had no money left, you know, we were living around the corner from this wonderful Eat Street but couldn't afford to eat there, and, you know, the kitchen had been ripped out, and we're living on, you know, 2-minute noodles kind of thing during the renovation. And I guess looking at the renovation plans that we had, we had a very, very tight budget of what we could achieve. So, you know, we had to paint. So we're up at 6 o'clock painting to 7:30 every morning before work, getting home at 6:30, painting to 10:30 at night, doing 20 hours of painting every weekend. And we did that for 3 months for one property, 3-story, huge, big property. And then my work wanted me to move to Sydney. We got a painter in to do the other side, the exact same meterage, and he did it in 5 days. And at that time I was like, you know, I think my time's worth more than this. And other than, you know, I went and did a quick ceiling paint after a renovation in a property in Sydney last year, and I'll do touch-ups and things, but I was never, I've got to be honest, I was never a great painter. I'd paint the ceiling. My husband would say, we need another coat. I'm like, it's Dulux, one coat paint. And he's like, no, we need another coat. So he's definitely the the finisher. But, you know, I knew my skills were in locating the property and project managing the team and getting the right team together. And that's, you know, what I really concentrated on after that, and looking at the potential. So making sure that the property had the renovation potential and the differential between unrenovated and renovated properties in the area to be able to create the money. So, yeah, that's where I concentrate my time and effort.
Coming up after the break, Slacksmith discusses her relationship with debt.
He said, babe, you better be careful. One day you'll owe $1 million. And I thought, bugger, I better not tell him I already do.
We learn about the adversity she faced in her years of mining.
When you're on a mine site and 300 men are on strike because they want to work with a girl, you've got to sit back and go, you know, why am I doing this?
We discuss her motivation and how it's helped her to achieve her current success.
Yeah, look, I'm on a constant quest for learning and doing my best and excelling at it. So I really want to learn from those that are at the top of their game.
And that's coming up next. I'm Tarun Shum and you're listening to Property Investory.
Thank you.
We discussed the mental blocks which can occur, especially during the first years of becoming an investor.
I run up against this regularly, and I think concerned and well-meaning friends and family can possibly be something that can hold you back. And I remember having a chat to my dad, and he said, "Babe, you better be careful. One day you'll owe $1 million." And I thought, bugger, I better not tell him I already do. So, you know, I think a lot of people hear the stories around what can go wrong. And, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people, and I know there's people who've been on your podcast who are professionals these days who started out because their dads were taken advantage of and, you know, lost the family fortune, and they wanted to make the world a better place by making that not happen to other people in the future. So, you know, there's some terrible stories about things that go wrong, and I think, you know, the real estate industry does have a lot of, you know, spruiking and people who are in it for themselves associated with the industry. However, the wonderful thing is there's so many people that are genuinely out there to assist those. And I think, you know, we've seen a real change in the real estate industry and the level of education and support. Even something as simple as a whole new industry of buyer's agents popping up in the last 10 years. You know, there's so many different ways that you can get into property these days, but there's also so much information available free and paid on the internet that people can use to validate their decisions on buying. So, you know, I think it's a good place to be these days.
What mindset did she have to adopt to implement the renovation strategy?
You know, I was very fortunate as a child. My mum used to always say to my sister and I, you can do anything you try as long and you can achieve anything you want to achieve, and you can even fly, you know, if you have God's help. And so she was very motivational, and, you know, we were always set up with the premise that we could achieve anything we put our minds to. And rightly or wrongly, you know, there's been some interesting experiences where I thought I could do things that possibly I couldn't. But going into any situation thinking of success and visualizing what the success looks like has definitely been, you know, a key to everything that I've ever done. And, you know, when you're on a mine site and 300 men are on strike because they want to work with a girl, you've got to sit back and go, you know, why am I doing this? And what am I concentrating on doing, and why do I want to be here? So understanding and being very much anchored by what you're trying to achieve is really important. And it's the same with renovation and property investing. You know, I speak to a lot of people who have a portfolio, and I'll look through the fact finder. You've got five properties here. But there's no, and I can tell by looking at these every single day, you know, who they've been listening to, where they've got their advice from, you know, and usually you can see someone has a strategic strategy to get to where they want to be. And often you look at these portfolios and they have one place in a regional mining town and another place in, you know, another area that's, you know, maybe an off the plan or house and land package. There's no consistency, and it's like they've just jumped to the next hot thing that's come along or been in a magazine. And I think the thing that is the downfall of a lot of people is the fact that they don't start with their goals, understand their goals, understand what they need to achieve their goals in the time frame, and then focus everything around that. Understand then your own risk profile and what is acceptable to you, to what you want to do. And, you know, when I talk about that, it's like high risk would be developments, low risk would be buy and hold. And understand your strategy and the time frame to achieve the strategy and what the property has to do to achieve the success it needs to get you to your goals on time. And then you've got a very tight buying criteria. Once you have that buying criteria, you know, you can easily look at properties and dismiss them if they don't fit it. And, you know, we've developed this suburb selector software that allows people to go through. And, you know, I run these location workshops around the country, a one-day workshop. And so often, you know, the 10 people in the room, we might have 30 suburbs that are on our shortlist. And I have very strict criteria. You know, if there's not more than 30% renters, they're out. And they're like, but all the other fundamentals, you know, stand up. I'm like, look, we only need 3 to 4 suburbs. There's so many that we don't need to waste our time on. Why don't we take out the ones with the biggest risk first? And you can be quite ruthless when you understand what your criteria is. And that's where you can get down to the suburb analysis and understand what suburb's going to deliver the results you want. And then you can get down in understanding what streets within the suburbs where renters want to be. And then you can find the right property. So for me, you know, you can take a lot of risk out of everything by understanding a process and just following it.
Yeah, I love that approach because it really, really, it's like if you have a step-by-step plan in place, there's nothing that could really go wrong because you've actually thought it through carefully and you've structured everything carefully as well too. And as you mentioned, yeah, it comes back down to your why when you first start because, I mean, anyone can just go and buy a property, whether it be, you know, just down the road or anywhere in a different state. But when it actually comes down to making numbers work and investing in a property that will generate income for you, or capital growth, it's really a process, isn't it?
It is. And look, I spoke to a lady last year and she had said to me, look, we really got it wrong. We bought a house and land package in the outskirts of, you know, Melbourne. There was other developers there. There was an oversupply, you know, so we had a house in the outskirts. It didn't work for us. So now we're going to buy a unit in a city. And I was like, How are you minimizing your risk? And she said, well, it's not a house, it's a unit, and it's not outskirts, it's in town. I was like, the risk's the same. It's an oversupply risk. And she's like, oh, I didn't think about it like that. And, you know, it's kind of just getting people over that little aha moment. It's like, oh, my gosh, I was about to repeat the same mistake.
It's very interesting. And I think it also comes back down to having a third opinion or second opinion to be able to see, because it's very easy to get delved into your own world thinking, I think I've chosen the right property. But then when you actually look and get someone's opinion on it, especially an expert, then they may give you a better insight in it, which you may not have even noticed at all.
Being a keen learner, Slacksmith has been influenced by her fair share of mentors.
Yeah, look, I'm on a constant quest for learning and doing my best and excelling at it. So I really want to learn from those that are at the top of their game. And, you know, back in 2011, I was looking around and I thought, if I'm going to make my next significant investment, it's not going to be in property, it's going to be in providing education for people so they can have good education in property. Who's the best in educating? And I wanted to see who was doing online education, because obviously if you're doing face-to-face education, you're limited by the number of people you can affect change with. And, you know, I had the opportunity of being the finance and property writer for Australian Women's Weekly for a period of time. I created some videos to help people work out how to get from their home to maybe their first investment property or buy their home a bit better. And I could see that having access to, you know, something online was giving people the opportunity to learn in their own time frame and be able to go back and look at it again. So I thought, you know, I want to find online educators and who could teach me how to do this property properly and, you know, with integrity. I just didn't want to be the here's the steak knives. I wanted to be able to be authentic and be who I am and, you know, deliver the kind of no BS message. So, you know, it wasn't really covered with all the glitz and glamour. And I couldn't find that in Australia. So I looked overseas and I found a mentor there and I spent a significant amount of time and money flying backwards and forwards, being part of a mastermind group and being part of a group of like-minded people and in a community. And regardless whether it's property investing or you know, photography or cat raising, whatever it is that your passion is, being part of a community of like-minded people, you know, just being supported and understanding and speaking the same language is so important. So I just got the most amazing learnings from that, and that's when I came back and started Your Property Success with the view of passing my knowledge and creating a community that could share their knowledge.
Slacksmith shares some of the mentors she found along the way.
So Brendan Burchard was the first mentor I worked with, the Experts Academy, and then I looked at how to actually deliver online education, so the actual mechanisms and technology behind it. So I looked at Jeff Walker, and I've recently been part of a mastermind group with Dean Jackson, who has a great podcast, I Love Marketing. And I genuinely love marketing. I love the opportunity to be able to talk to people and influence in the right way, a change of thinking that will then lead them on a journey to go on as a quest to learn something more. And, yeah, so they're the people I'm working with. I'm actually For the last year, I haven't been with a mentor, and I know the importance of being stretched and held accountable with mentoring. And I'm heading out to spend 4 days with a new mentor that I'm working with next week. So he works with, I think, 8 people a year. So really excited about that. So, yeah, it's kind of what's the saying? It's, you know, when the time is ready, the master will come. I think
when the student is ready, the master will appear.
Yeah, grasshopper. So I've been a grasshopper many a time, and I, you know, as you grow and learn something from someone, it's time to move on, and that's been a great opportunity for me. And I've recently joined a fabulous group also called the League of Extraordinary Women, and just fabulous group of business women, incredibly successful, incredibly generous. They have wonderful events, and just, you know, listening to what other business people go through and what they've had as great successes and failures, and supporting each other's fabulous. So I really encourage your listeners to, if you are keen on property investing, find yourself a community where you can have a chat about it, because it really makes for helping you get to your goals sooner.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm all for getting mentors and coaches as well too, because it really does help. With I guess accountability, but also at the same time they can also give you guidance that you might not see within yourself, because it's very easy to just think that you know everything, but you actually don't. So
absolutely. Yeah. So I was doing one of the services that I provide for my pre-approved mortgage clients is if they find a property and they want a second set of eyes, I do an ideal review with them, and this client, we kept coming up with these properties, and it's a review against their buying criteria, and it just wasn't meeting his buying criteria. And we looked big picture, and the suburb actually didn't meet any of the criteria. So I was saying to him, look, you know, if this buying criteria is what you need to get to your goals, then you're going to have to move suburbs and do some more analysis. And he was saying, it's just taking me 3 months of analysis to do this. I don't want to move on. It's like, well, you know, investing in 10, 15 year plan here, another 3 months and getting the right suburb so it delivers your plan for you sooner is probably better. And, you know, since he found the right suburb and then the right property and, you know, put that one to bed. But, you know, sometimes you have to kind of move on and sacrifice a bit of time, but you do learn from it, and you learn to get quicker at the processing.
Yeah, it's like opportunity cost at the end of the day, or sunken cost. You can spend all that time, and you got to sometimes decide, is it really worth continuing to move on, or you keep pursuing it? And sometimes it's just better just to let it go. If it's not right, then you got to move on to the next
thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there's a grieving period there. Like, I speak to a lot of people who are like, you know, they might miss out on auction on the dream property they're after. But, you know, if you're very clear on what you want, it's amazing how often within the next 10 days the right property comes up for them.
It's all emotion, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, yeah, you got to separate it out.
Yeah, emotion versus logic. And did you seek any mentors also for renovating too as well when you're building up your equity through that path?
Yeah, look, back in like 2000 and 2001 when I started renovating, there was no renovating experts out there, and so I really had to derive my own knowledge about what would work. And so once again I went back to basics of what's the risk, and the risk is that you overcapitalize or you renovate and people don't like the renovation. And my whole key around renovating, and the reason I renovated, was for the valuer. So getting that valuation up so I could pull equity was the number one reason that I wanted to renovate. The second one was to have it appeal to a renter so that the renter would rent it and I'd have low vacancies and high rental yields. So, you know, for me, I then, you know, worked out that it was the pricing disparity or the difference between unrenovated and renovated properties that was going to be the key to that strategy. And then doing the analysis and finding out what were the properties that were renovated on the market, how much were they selling for, what was the unrenovated property worth, how much would it cost me to get the unrenovated to the renovated, and was there a profit there? And for a lot of suburbs, there is no pricing disparity between renovated and renovated. So many properties deserve to be renovated, but very, very, very few should be. So it was finding that out that was, I guess, the secret to the success that I then shared with everyone.
She shares some of the things she looks out for when considering renovations.
I was always looking for the twist. So how could I take a property and take it to a higher value and better value, and do it as quickly as possible so I could create more equity to build my portfolio quickly? because I didn't want to be an active property investor that is, you know, out there looking at properties every day. I wanted to have a set and forget portfolio that just goes up in value by $1 million a year. You know, how nice would that be?
Nice. I joined the club.
And pays for itself. So I wanted to get there as quickly as possible. And I found a suburb that had the pricing disparity, Carlton. Mm-hmm. I then looked at what the fixtures and fittings and standards were that the renovated properties were selling for. And then I looked at the property that I had and worked out how I could find those fixtures and fittings at a cheaper price that had the same perceived value but didn't have the cost. So it was around sourcing the right properties from the right areas and finding and sourcing and those and putting them in place.
Just to ask, to put in perspective, what kind of house did we buy in the Carlton area and what was the average pricing so we can sort of get an idea?
The average prices were around 400,000.
Yep.
So, you know, back in 2001. And we kept driving up and down this street and it was, you know, one of the premium streets and had these beautiful old mansions in them, you know, three-story, 1860 built, you know, brick properties. And we'd say one day this is our end goal. And what came up was that two of these properties were being sold under the same bill of sale. So instead of saying, you know, going once, twice, 400,000, it was going once, twice, 800,000. So different titles, yeah. One bill of sale. And my husband and I, well, my then boyfriend and I, were looking at buying a property each because I wanted to minimize my risk just in case the relationship didn't go
ahead. Fair enough.
And your borrowing capacity, I knew that individually our borrowing capacities was going to be higher individually and less land tax, et cetera, benefits. So, you know, I knew strategically buying individually was a good way to start. So these properties were, you know, three-story, 1860, beautiful old mansions essentially that had been built, you know, within a kilometre of CBD Melbourne and completely, you know, hadn't been fixed or touched for a long period of time. And my husband had a higher borrowing capacity than I did and he took the one that had been had the parking at the back and had a little bit more renovation done, and mine was, you know, really in a bad condition. So we actually used the pest and building inspection and we used the Residex valuation report as part of the negotiating tool because we got to auction, it was passed in, we were the highest bidder, and we went in and said, gee, you know, look at this pest and building report. It says it's got about $50,000 of works just to make it livable, and, you know, the comparable sales in the street are this, you know. And luckily the vendor said, oh, okay, fair enough, and we got the property. So
good negotiation.
Yeah. And having, you know, access to those material and reports, et cetera, gave us some credibility rather than saying I just don't want to pay anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they were sitting there going, well, if this person thinks this, the next person that gets the best in pest and building inspection, you know, they're going to think the same thing. So, you know, bought it for $425,000, did the $50,000 renovation on it, had it revalued it 9 months later at $900,000. Did a bit of a – in 2009 I did a bit of a top-up to it as well. And it's always rented since then at $1,000 a week. It's worth around $1.4 million now.
Wow.
And, great location, great property, always in demand. I've only ever had three tenancy agreements in that 15 years. So people just keep wanting to rent there. And, yeah, it's a great little cornerstone for the portfolio.
That's great. So from there, you're able to start that first property off and then leapfrog to your next property by drawing out that equity to buy a few other properties. Is that how?
Yeah, and we were rent investors for 10 years. So we rented ourselves and bought investment properties. Often we'd move into an investment property, had a little unit on beachfront at Bondi Beach. We moved in there over winter when no one wants to rent. And did a three-month renovation and enjoyed that and then moved out and rented ourselves. So often just to save some money, we were living in the renovations.
Yeah.
And anyone who's ever done that, you know how bad that is. You're covered in plaster dust going to work and, you know, you're cooking in a microwave for months on end. But, you know, when you're making more out of the equity gain in a property within a few months than you're making at work, it makes a difference. And I know, you know, a lot of people – look at those numbers and they think, you know, I'm going to give up work and or sell the property and release the equity straight away. We'd always had the strategy. It was around a buy and hold long-term strategy, and work was fine. I mean, I don't want to give up work. So for me, it was around just having the choice to be able to work or not.
Yep.
But also I knew that I needed to have a job for the borrowing capacity, which is so important. And with the changes of ASIC and APRA in 2016, you know, investors have to be savvy about what they do and their financing and have the right income to be able to continue investing. So I knew that I wasn't going to be giving up a job anytime soon.
So what is Slagsmith's portfolio actually worth, and what's their plan moving ahead?
Well, great revelation here. I'm a very boring investor who walks the talk. You know, I wrote the book, Your Property Success with Renovation, 2 properties, 1 renovation, $1 million in the bank. I don't believe you need hundreds of properties. I don't believe you need to be trading properties. I know, you know, someone who has a home and accesses equity, who buys a property, has an equity growth that allows them to do a renovation in year 3, and equity growth to be able to buy a second property in year 5, can set and forget their portfolio and within 15 years sell it down. If you have, you know, the typical growth characteristics of an area, sell it down, pay off your mortgage, pay your capital gains tax, and put $1 million in the bank. And, you know, for me, it was about having that simplicity. So, you know, we haven't bought a property for many years, and the portfolio goes up quite the well-located properties, they goes up quite considerably every year. Mm. And I think it's worth around about $8 million now, with low LVR, just based on the equities.
And how many properties are there in that portfolio?
7. They all started around about $400,000 to $500,000.
Yeah, so you've just amassed and bought and hold, and that strategy allows you to be able to have that freedom because you've got enough equity to be able to, I guess, draw down equity on that. Do you actually, there are strategies out there. Do you believe on drawing out equity to live on the lifestyle, or do you rely on the cash flow?
That was really big in 2003. Like, I know I spoke to quite a few people about doing that, and you know, there is difficulty in living on borrowed money. And I know there's, and people have been on your podcast who, you know, even buy their cars.
Mm-hmm. On, you know, I can tell you who. But yeah,
you and I have both interviewed them. But I don't think debt is bad by any stretch of the imagination. I think there's good debt and bad debt, And I know the reality is that a lot of people do live with some bad debt until they get to a position of, you know, managing their money better and understanding their goals and having that destination they can be anchored to so that they can achieve what they want, you know, every day, knowing what they're getting towards. But, you know, I've got clients. I mean, I obviously don't imply my strategies on all of my mortgage clients or my students.
Yep.
And I've got clients that do developments. I've got students that are, you know, doing granny flats. I've got people who do pull out equity and live off equity. So, you know, I've got clients on, you know, $40,000 with, you know, $2 million portfolios, and, you know, have been really strategic about how they've bought and been very clever when the lending environment was a bit easier. But, you know, I think that it's really horses for courses, and when you work out what your strategy is and your risk profile, and coming from the basis of your goals and understanding how many properties and what they need to look like to get to your goal. And that's why I developed that calculator on investorschoice.com.au, the portfolio planner, because I know that how hard it is for people to go, you know, I want $100,000 income in 10 years' time. How many properties does that mean I need now? Because there's a capital gains tax implications and all of those things. And I think, you know, you just need to simply understand what you need to be shooting for, and then what are the property characteristics need to do to achieve that for you. So, yeah, I think everyone has a different way to get there. You know, we haven't bought a property in many years because we don't need to, don't want to. Property portfolio is fine. You know, if I speak to my property managers once every 3 months, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's the good thing about buying and hold and set and forget. Or not necessarily forget that you don't come back to it, but that's, you know, the lifestyle that allows you to have that freedom, because you know that property just does its thing.
So I know that we've achieved, you know, over $100 million worth of lending in the last couple of years and helped clients get there. So there's that kind of, I guess, transferred satisfaction of getting people into the properties they want to be in. And, you know, we're kind of hands-on, so we're interested in the properties they're buying and where they're buying and having that conversation around their strategy as well. And also, you know, just the community of the students in the Ultimate Guide to Renovation, Your Property Success Club, just seeing their renovations and their stories and what they're doing. Although I do, you know, I did two renovations last year on existing properties. You know, I'm not actively out there renovating all the time, but it's nice to have a hand in, you know, looking at what other people are doing.
It's clear Slacksmith carries many positive habits and rituals which contribute to her daily success. But is there anything else?
I'm really tenacious. So I'm curious and tenacious. So I don't give up, and I'm very disciplined. And so if I have a goal or something that I want to achieve, regardless if it's in my personal life or professional aspirations, etc., I will do what it takes without hurting anyone or myself to achieve that goal. So, you know, once I put my mind to something, you know, I really give it my all. And I guess being tenacious is probably the dominant characteristic of that.
She has had some help along the way through reading and self-learning.
I have a long list of books I recommend. Obviously Jan Summers, I think, is probably the queen of property investing in Australia. Low risk, really simple. You know, she got the formula, she cracked it, and she shared it. She was a school teacher. She writes like a school teacher. It's very clear and concise. So for people starting out, I think Jan Summers is fabulous. I think from an inspirational point of view, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is great as well. There are so many writers and there's so many books out there that it's amazing. And when the publishers approached me and asked me to write a book, I was like, I had at that stage 120 on my bookshelf. I was like, there's nothing I can say that people want to know that's different. And they're like, yeah, they probably just want to hear it in your voice. So, you know, often what you read is very similar in some of the books, but there's always one absolute gem that I pick up. So I'm always reading, you know, property books and trying to increase my knowledge. And you know, our community is always recommending books to each other as well. So, but I'd start with the fundamentals, and I think, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Jan Summers is probably a really good place to start.
Thank you to Jan Slacksmith, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about her journey and get a copy of the episode guide on the website, head over to propertyinvestory.com/guide. This guide will give you the inside scoop on the little gold nuggets of wisdom all our guests share from their backstory and their overall strategies and philosophies. Plus, you'll get a copy of the advice broken down and shared in a quick and easy to consume format. Just head over to propertyinvestory.com/guide and download it today.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.